For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Now more than 750 new cases of COVID-19 in Virginia and the first death confirmed by state health officials in the Central Shenandoah Health District. Governor Northam signed a number of bills on Saturday, including anti-discrimination legislation that offers new LGBTQ protections, and another measure that gives localities, including Charlottesville, permission to remove Confederate monuments. Northam has also announced plans to free about 2,000 inmates early due to the pandemic. This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, April 13. The Virginia Department of Health reported more than 750 new cases of COVID-19 over the weekend. The reported total of more than 5,200 cases is almost certainly an undercount due to a lack of widespread testing and the likelihood that many people without symptoms could be spreading the highly contagious virus. Virginia's death toll now stands at 141. That includes the first death confirmed by VDH in the Central Shenandoah Health District, which includes the counties of Rockingham, Augusta, Rockbridge, Highland, and Bath. VDH did not specify where that death occurred. While most cases in Virginia are in the eastern and northern parts of the state, VDH reports 124 cases in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County, and 77 cases in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Governor Ralph Northam signed a number of bills on Saturday, including anti-discrimination legislation that offers new LGBTQ protections and another measure that gives localities permission to remove Confederate monuments. And I'll have more on that from Charlottesville in just a moment. But citing economic uncertainty caused by the coronavirus pandemic, Northam wants to delay increasing the state's minimum wage. The governor wants to amend a bill so that the wage increase will kick in May 1st next year instead of in January. Northam proposed the same May effective date for a number of other labor-related measures, including a bill that would allow limited public sector collective bargaining. The governor's office also said he had signed bills that make sweeping changes to voting in Virginia by repealing the state's voter ID law, making Election Day a state holiday, and expanding access to early voting. Well, one of the bills signed by Governor Northam over the weekend gives localities the authority to remove, relocate, or add context to Confederate statues. This comes 4 years after a citizen petition and a newly minted city councilor began raising the issue in Charlottesville. Hawes Spencer with VPM reports.
When Wes Bellamy called for the removal of the Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson statues, he says many said it would never happen.
This is Virginia. This is the capital of the Confederacy. Go work on something else. You're destroying the community.
Since then, there have been growing calls to address the more than 200 Confederate memorials across the state, which many say are a painful symbol of slavery and racism.
For the Commonwealth, it means that we're moving in the right direction. It means that we are moving from a state that's only known for the Confederacy, only known for the Unite the Right rally, only known for blackface, but we got this one right.
Local governments can begin the process of considering the future of Confederate monuments in their communities after the law takes effect July 1st.
In Charlottesville, Hawes Spencer, WMRA News.
Last week, WMRA began a series of reports from Virginia Public Radio that answers listener questions about COVID-19. Here's part three.
This is the COVID-19 Minute. Expert answers to your questions. Listener Jennifer Rowe of Charlottesville says her favorite Riverside Trail is getting crowded, and she wonders if you can catch COVID from others out for exercise. We put that question to Dr. Amy Mathers, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Virginia. Her answer, not likely, because of the way COVID is transmitted.
Some contagious illnesses are airborne, meaning that the droplets are so small that they can hang in the air for a long period of time. So just going into a room with somebody, even if you're not close to them, means that you could get it.
But the COVID virus travels heavy, in droplets that don't stay long in the air.
They're big enough that gravity actually takes them down to the ground. They can't really travel much farther than 6 feet, and mostly it's the 3-foot range around somebody.
That's not to say infection while jogging or walking is impossible.
Give people wide berth, I think that's recommended, but it's probably much more high risk to be facing someone and have discussion or a prolonged contact than just passing somebody transiently with sort of a one-time breath exposure of those droplets.
One other thought, if you see someone coming,
close your mouth.
Breathing through your nose is thought to be a safer way to clean the air that you breathe. You know, you've got lots of nose hairs that probably prevent some of those droplets from getting to where they need to be in the back of your throat to start replicating.
Next time, some surprising tips on hand washing. I'm Sandy Houseman with the COVID-19 Minute.
Email your question to wmra@jmu.edu. Type COVID question in the subject heading. As educators across Virginia adjust to a state of emergency, some programs that rely on hands-on learning face particular challenges in transitioning to digital or remote instruction. The School of Nursing at James Madison University is using virtual clinicals for its nursing student seniors. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Say you, as a nurse, have a patient in front of you who came into the emergency room with chest pain and shortness of breath. The pain subsides after they receive aspirin and nitroglycerin, and the patient appears stable before suddenly entering into ventricular fibrillation. What do you do?
Some JMU nursing students are parsing through these types of questions in a virtual clinical in order to graduate on time.
Our placements are all over at every level.
Melody Eaton is the head of the School of Nursing. Typically, the students receive a combination of face-to-face interactions with clients and simulated scenarios in the classroom. The state of Virginia normally requires that at least half of their clinical practice be in person.
And they did waive that for our graduating seniors and students across the state so that students could graduate and enter the workforce sooner.
Eaton says that while nothing quite replaces the experience of a face-to-face practicum, there are some advantages to simulated learning.
Sometimes better than an experience in the clinical setting where you don't know what you're going to get for the day. The virtual simulations can target things that all students need to know.
These simulations will see the current nursing seniors through the end of their program, but there's uncertainty about the future of nursing education amidst a pandemic. Eaton says JMU and other nursing schools may consider honoring voluntary service with academic credit, such as service with the Virginia Medical Reserve Corps. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
And you can learn more about that story at WMRA.org and on the WMRA app. Finally today, Governor Northam announced plans to free about 2,000 inmates who are scheduled for release from state prisons within the next year. They must pose no threat to public safety and have good prison records. About 28,000 more will remain behind bars, even if they are disabled or have medical conditions, putting them at high risk for death if they were to catch COVID-19. Meanwhile, a federal lawsuit may mean freedom for others, as Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman reports.
Prisoners are understandably nervous about news of a highly contagious and potentially deadly virus spreading outside prison walls. We spoke with one inmate at the maximum security Wallens Ridge Correctional Center.
There's nothing that we can do, nowhere we can go. If the coronavirus hits here, we dead.
And families have been begging the governor for clemency. 18-year-old Jalen Midget's father will be eligible for parole in July, but for now he's locked up at the Buckingham Correctional Center.
It's scary to know that my dad may be exposed to the virus in this situation where they cannot social distance from anyone. Imagining him getting the virus is really upsetting because what if he dies and I never see him again? He wasn't sentenced to die.
It's clear to everyone that correctional facilities can't comply with CDC guidance on social distancing. So federal prisons and jails have been working with judges and prosecutors to free prisoners. Charlottesville's Commonwealth's attorney, Joe Platania, says 171 inmates were recently released from the Albemarle Charlottesville Regional Jail.
We started out trying to release everyone that's medically vulnerable. We then looked at everyone that had an active sentence remaining of 6 months or less and tried to figure out how to get them out on home electronic incarceration to finish their sentences.
But Virginia's governor seems powerless to do much with fewer than 2,400 inmates eligible for parole. Ralph Northam said he could not just pardon prisoners because the law requires each to apply and be considered separately.
My folks are working around the clock. A number of individuals have been released, but we have to follow our protocol. And as far as an executive order, I don't plan on releasing an executive order.
As a result, fewer than 100 people were freed in March. But Northam could soon have new powers to protect prisoners. A Charlottesville lawyer acting on behalf of 27 inmates at 12 state correctional centers has filed suit in federal court.
It's a tinderbox as far as spread. I mean, my first client, Brooke Worley, She was on board to bring this suit last week, and then Monday morning she tested positive for COVID.
Elliot Harding believes keeping people locked up in close quarters during the pandemic constitutes cruel and unusual punishment, especially for those at high risk of death.
Some have respiratory issues. A few of them only have one lung. Some have cancer, multiple sclerosis, COPD. I mean, the system's not equipped to be able to handle this.
Harding hopes the state will agree, paving the way for a federal court-supervised settlement in which many prisoners could be released early or sent home with monitors. And he hopes the court will act quickly.
It's my understanding that the court wants to have a preliminary teleconference early next week, maybe even as early as Monday.
One other hope for inmates and their families, the General Assembly returns to Richmond April 22nd for a special outdoor session at which lawmakers could make it easier to release prisoners who don't pose a risk to public safety. The state reports 26 inmates have already tested positive for COVID-19, one a juvenile, 5 have been hospitalized, and another 24 staffers have also contracted the virus. I'm Sandy Houseman.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and do enjoy your Monday.